Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Viewers, this is the sixth episode of the 17th topic. As you would recall, the 17th topic relates to the narrative which says that the Quran was revealed on 7 Ahruf. We have already discussed six major interpretations of this narrative. In this episode, we shall discuss the seventh interpretation, and then also we shall view people who have rejected this narrative or they have given their own interpretation of this narrative while saying that although the isnad is acceptable, but there is no plausible meaning of the narrative. But that we shall do after we discuss the seventh and final interpretation of this narrative. The seventh and final interpretation is ascribed to Khalil ibn Ahmad, the famous grammarian of the Quran, who is also attributed to have authored the first dictionary of the Quran, the Kitab al-Ain. So Khalil ibn Ahmad al-Farahidi, in the opinion of Zarkashi, he says that the opinion of Khalil ibn Ahmad, who actually says that this view refers to seven recitals of a word or expression of a Quran, seven possible recitals of a word or expression of the Quran. So Zarkashi says that this is the weakest of all the opinions which has been presented in as far as the interpretation of this narrative is concerned. Now, as far as the existing criticism on this narrative is concerned, Suyuti, while referring to this opinion, has said that it has been criticized by many people on the basis of the fact that very few expressions of the Quran can be read in seven ways. So he says that if this interpretation refers to the fact that the Quran interpretations or the verses or the words of the Quran can be read in seven possible ways, and there are extremely few of them. Some examples of expressions which can be read in seven or even more than seven ways are wa'abada taghut and fala taqul lahuma uffin. The first of them is verse 60 of Surah Ma'idah, the fifth surah, and the second is verse 23 of Surah Bani Israel, the 17th surah. So he says that perhaps these are the two expressions which can be read in seven ways. Otherwise, there are extremely few which can be read in seven ways. Imam Khuy says that if this refers to seven readings in general and not the seven famous ones, the seven variant readings, the seven which we know exist, then this interpretation cannot be accepted because, according to him, the readings are numerous. And he says that if this refers to the fact that at most there are seven differences in reading each word or expression of the Quran, then this is also not correct. This is because if by this interpretation is meant that most of the Quranic words or expressions can be read in seven ways, then this is not correct, because those which can be read in seven ways are very few. So this is something very similar to what we have earlier seen recorded by Suyuti by referring to various people. He says that there are very few expressions. And the example which Hui has also given is that exactly the same example, Abadat Taghut and Falatu Taqullahuma Uffin. He says that this particular expression has been read in more than 30 ways by declining the noun and the verb and the various letters found in this expression. So he says that it is very, very, these are the two expressions which can perhaps be, perhaps best be presented as examples, but these have been read in more than 30 ways. And Khatib in his Mujmal Qiraat al-Qur'ani has actually referred to these. People who are interested can look up the ways in which these two expressions have been read variously. Now, needs to be understood here that this was as far as the criticism is concerned, that we cannot regard this to be an interpretation, a very plausible interpretation, because there are extremely few expressions or words of the Quran, and we have just seen the two examples it has been posited that these two examples are major representations of the fact that certain words and expressions can be read in more than seven ways. After this critique, our scholars have also pointed out the fact that it is extremely wrong to interpret this interpretation to mean that the seven recitals actually refer to the seven famous readings. So this is they say that is totally wrong, that the Sabat al-Ahruf narrative never refers to the seven famous readings. And as you can see on your screen, the names of the seven famous reciters are being displayed and their place of origination. So scholars have strongly criticized the view that Sabat al-Ahruf, when it is said that it refers to seven recitals it does not refer to these seven famous readings. The seven recital refers to the seven ways in which a particular expression or a word can be read. Now, scholars like Abu Shammah have said that it is absolutely against the authorities, consensus of the authorities, to regard the seven recitals of the Sabah al-Ahruf as interpreted here to refer to seven famous readings. Ibn Taymiyyah also says that there is no difference of opinion between authorities that the seven Ahruf are not the seven famous readings. Al-Qurtubi says that many scholars like Al-Dawdi and Ibn Sufra are of the opinion that it is incorrect to equate the seven readings to the seven Ahruf because these readings emanate from one harf, which was the one on which Usman gathered the Ummah. So this has been expressed by many people. Ibn Jazari, in his An-Nashr fil Qiraat al-Ashr, says that this opinion is absolutely absurd. He has actually gone a step ahead and said it is an absolutely absurd opinion because it would mean that this narrative of the Prophet would have no use until the seven famous reciters were born many, many years later, and then their recital could be taken. Because if this refers to the seven famous readings, which all are ascribed to seven famous reciters, then Ibn Jazi says that they could have only been meaningful once these people had been born a couple of centuries after the Prophet passed away, and then their readings were regarded to be the interpretation of this seven Ahruf narrative, which is absolutely not called for, and it is an absurd interpretation in the view of Imam Ibn al-Jazari. So, viewers, this completes our analysis of the seven major interpretations of this narrative. This particular narrative, as you would recall, I had stated earlier on that people have presented in excess of 30 interpretations, and I have selected seven major ones. However, some of the other ones which can be rejected by just reading through them, I will later on enlist them when we close this discussion on this particular narrative. So now, viewers, we will go back to some of the other scholars. If you recall, I had said in my first talk that there is a group of scholars who says that they do not accept this narrative, not that it is not reliably reported or unreliably reported. They regard this narrative to be a reliable report, but there are two major scholars who say that they are unable to give any explanation of this narrative. And amongst them, the first of these is the famous grammarian Abu Jafar Muhammad ibn Sa'dan, who died in 231 Hijra. So a person as old as this person who belonged to the earliest era says that this is something which cannot be called for. And the other person is Imam Suyuti himself, who actually rejects this narrative by saying that, as we shall see later on, that there is no explanation of this. And both of these say that it could be a reliably reported narrative, but the meaning of this narrative is ambiguous, or it cannot be. They cannot reach the meaning, or they cannot give any convincing meaning of this narrative. Now, as far as Muhammad ibn Sa'dan, the grammarian, is concerned, the basis of his reason is that this hadith is enigmatic because the word harf has different meanings. And then he gives various meanings of the word harf. He says that the Arabs called their poetic compositions as harf. Then he says that the Arabs called their eulogies as harf also. The letter of the alphabet is also called a harf. The word harf also connotes a meaning or a way, as found in verse 11 of Surah Hajj, the 22nd Surah. So he says that the enigma in the meaning of the word harf is because the word harf in itself is used in multiple meanings. And this multiplicity of meanings actually makes the word itself something very questionable. We shall critically view his view or his interpretation later on. But at the moment, I'm just stating his view, which says that simply the word harf has a number of meanings. And he is actually referring to the fact that a word which has a number of meanings, how can any convincing explanation be given of such a word? Now, let me move on to Imam Suyuti. Imam Suyuti has actually stated his view very precisely in the Sharah of Muwatta, which is called Tanwirul Hawalik. He is the author of this Sharah, or this commentary on Muwatta. And his actual words I'm going to cite before you. He says, وَأُرَجِّحُهَا إِنْ دِي قَوْلَ مَنْ قَالْ إِنَّ هَذَا مِنَ الْمُتَشَابِهِ الَّذِي لَا يُدْرَى تَأْوِيلُهُ. To me, the best opinion in this regard is that of the people who say that this hadith is from among the matters of mutashabihat, the meaning of which cannot be understood. So Imam Suyuti actually says that the meaning cannot be understood as far as he is concerned, and it is from among the mutashabihat. So this is as far as the basis of these two scholars are concerned, the basis on which they invoke the fact that this narrative, according to them, has an ambiguous meaning. Abu Ja'far Muhammad ibn Sa'dan has actually cited his reason, but Imam Suyuti has not cited the reason, but he has just given a preference, and he said that to him the best opinion is that this narrative is from among the mutashabihat, which means something or some views or some aspects which cannot be understood. So he is actually implying the fact that this narrative is a narrative which cannot have any sound explanation. Now, let me come to the existing criticism on these two views. Now, Imam Zurqani has actually criticized Ibn Sa'dan's view on the ground that if a word has more than one meaning, then this does not invoke the criticism that that particular narrative in which a word has multiple meanings that cannot have a sound interpretation, because there are so many words which have multiple meanings, but the context, the way in which a word is used, they can easily tell us that which are the meaning or which particular meaning is that word used in a particular passage. So having a multiplicity of meanings is no problem at all as far as Zurqani is concerned, and of course he makes a lot of sense. He has also given a very common example. There are so many examples in this regard in which words, a single word may have multiple meanings, but the way in which that word is used and the context in which it is used is sufficient to tell us which exactly is the meaning from among its various meanings in which it is used. The example that Zurqani has given is regarding the word ayn. So he has given two examples. One of them is nazartu bil ayn al-mujarrada, and the other example is sharibtu min ayn Zubaydah. So here both of the word and used in both expressions, and he says that it is so clear that, for example, in the first expression the word ayn refers to its meaning I, which would mean that I saw something through my naked eye, my plain eyes. Nazartu bil ayn al-mujarrada. So here the word ayn refers to its meaning of I. Now the word ayn has other meanings as well. So one other meaning is a fountain. And here when the other expression it says, sharibtu min ayn Zubaydah, it means that I actually sipped from the ayn of the fountain of Zubaydah. I drank from the fountain of Zubaydah. So although the word is same, the word ayn is used in both expressions, but we know that which meaning is implied where. We cannot say that the word ayn in the first expression refers to the fountain, or the word ayn in the second expression refers to the eye, because it would be absurd to interpret a sentence if these meanings are ascribed to it. So in a nutshell, Imam Zurqani says that it is very common that words can have different meanings, but then there is always a methodology which can be followed in giving preference to the meaning in which letter is used in a specific place. Now, this is as far as Muhammad ibn Sa'dan's critique is concerned. It has invited this critique by Imam Zurqani. But to the best of my opinion, Imam Suyuti's remark has not invited any weighty opinion or any weighty critique in this regard. Now, I'd now like to further analyze both these opinions, and I think that, as I've already said, that Imam Zurqani's opinion is very strong, and as far as Suyuti is concerned, he has a right to say that there is no convincing explanation or no sound explanation to him in the light of the fact that even the seven interpretations that we have so far analyzed, we can see that there are so many questions which arise on these interpretations, which have already been presented by our past authorities and which have been further added to, and none of them have been found convincing. So this is quite probable that Imam Suyuti, even in his own times, when he analyzed this narrative, he also ended up analyzing all the major interpretations and then concluding the fact that none of the interpretations are convincing, and hence he recorded his opinion that the meaning of this narrative is from among the mutashabihat. views. Now I come to the third category of scholars. The third category of scholars belongs to people who actually not only say that this narrative is not soundly reported, but if in a more precise way, they totally reject this narrative. They say that this narrative is not soundly reported, and the fact that it does not present any sound explanation. These are the people who have in fact rejected this narrative. In short, so the category which I just discussed could be the people who have, although not rejected it, but they, what we call, is that they have given their tacit rejection, in which they would have raised enough questions which in their regard would be that it is sufficient that we should actually do tawakkuf, or we should tacitly hold this narrative until something convincing comes about. But the category that I'm now going to discuss are the people who have totally rejected this narrative, and they say it is not sound at all. And two representative people of this particular category are Abul Qasim Al-Khoi and my own teacher, Javed Ahmed Al-Ghamidi. So now I'm going to present their views on this narrative, and then we will critically evaluate the way they have, or the reasons which have led them to reject this narrative. I would also like to bring to your notice that there are other scholars who also have rejected this narrative, which include Noldike and Shawli and Tamanna Imadi. They have criticized and rejected this narrative. However, the nature of their criticism and their rejection is that they have done this in parts, and the comprehensive nature in which Imam Khoi and Ghamidi have criticized this narrative actually covers a better part of the criticism of these authorities as well. So I have just chosen to present before you Khoi and Ghamidi. So as far as Imam Khoi is concerned, he has actually cited 11 major variants of this hadith. And once he has cited them, he has presented his criticism, and his criticism can be classified under three separate headings, because the nature of his criticism has three separate nuances to it, and they are of three different types. The first is his criticism on the chain of narration of the narrative. The second is his criticism on the text of the narrative. And thirdly, he's pointed out contradictions between the variants that he has cited. So we can see that his criticism can be classified into three major portions. As far as the first of this is concerned, this is the one in which he says that the chain of narration of this narrative is not reliable. And the reason that he criticizes is that none of these narratives, the way they have been reported here, have been reported in through the chains of the Ahlul Bayt. He says that the Ahlul Bayt do not figure in the chains of narration of this narrative, and this is sufficient reason for him to reject these narrative. He says that not only we do not find any Ahlul Bayt in these chains of narration, and by them he of course is referring to the famous imams of the Shiite authorities. He also says that on the contrary, the Shiite imams themselves have given another interpretation, or another actually variant of this particular genre, and he then cites that those variants. So he says that Imam Abu Jafar has mentioned this hadith, and this is found in Usul al-Kafi. He says that the words are أَنَّ الْقُرْآنَ wahid, نَزَلَ مِنْ عِنْدِ wahid, وَلَكِنَّ الْإِخْتَلَافِ يَجِي مِنْ قِبَلِ الرُّوَاتِ. And the words are, the Quran has been revealed from one. However, the differences are because of the narrators. So this is, he says that this particular narrative is actually telling us that if there is any difference, then it is because of the narrators, because the Quran was revealed by one, and referring to the fact that it was Almighty who revealed the Quran. Another hadith that he quotes is وَقَدْ سَأَلَ الْفُزَيْلُ بْنُ يُسَارِ أَبَا عَبْدِلَّهِ, which of course is Imam Jafar. And he says, إِنَّ النَّاسَ فَقَالَ إِنَّ النَّاسَ يَقُولُونَ إِنَّ الْقُرْآنَ نَزَلَ عَلَى سَبَعَةِ أَحْرُفٍ فَقَالَ أَبُو عَبْدُلَّهِ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامُ كَذَبُوا أَعْدَاءُ اللَّهِ وَلَكِنَّهُ نَزَلَ عَلَى حَرْفٍ وَاحِدٍ مِنْ عِنْدِ الْوَاحِدِ. Which Fuzail ibn Yasar asked Abu Abdullah, People say that the Quran has been revealed on 7 Ahruf. So Abu Abdullah Imam Jafar Sadiq replied, these enemies of God, Qazabu Adawullah are the Arabic words, have lied. It was revealed on one harf from the one. So it was the words are, وَلَكِنَّهُ نَزَلَ مِنْ حَرْفٍ وَاحِدْ مِنْ عِنْدِ الْوَاحِدْ. So according to Imam Hui, we have a contrary report which says that the Quran was actually revealed on one harf. It is absolutely a wrong thing that to believe that the Quran was revealed on 7 ahruf. So this is how he has presented his critique on the chain of narration. Now let me go on to his critique on the criticism of the text. Now as far as criticism on the text itself is concerned, I'm not going to repeat it here because I have already presented it amongst the seven various interpretations all along these talks, so that you can have an idea of his critique. He has almost criticized all the interpretation, all these seven interpretations which I have presented, and you can just have a recap on them. Now, I'm going on to his next point of criticism, and which is that he has actually pointed out contradiction between these variants. So what I'm doing is I'm actually presenting his critique before you, and then later on I will present my own views on his critique. So as far as that part is concerned, that is yet to come. But at the moment, I'm just citing his views. I've already cited two of his critiques. One of them is that the chain of narration is not reliable according to him, or it goes against narratives which are found from the Ahlul Bayt, which say that the Quran was revealed on one harf. Then the critique on the text is the one which I've already just said. I have already presented it all along when we were discussing various interpretations. And now we come to his third critique, and this says that the variants which he has presented, and as I said, he has actually presented 11 variants in this regard, and although he has not cited them, he has not referenced them, but I have referenced them in my own talks when I have presented Hui's view earlier, and again here also I shall reference them, these 11 variants, in which he says that there are contradictions between various narratives. So first, the first contradiction that he's pointed out, he says that in some narratives, and he's referring in all probability to a narrative which is found in Tabri's Tafsir. He says, Gabriel read out the Quran to the Prophet on one harf, and he asked for more until the matter reached 7 ahruf. If you recall, this is a narrative that we have been discussing in some of the interpretations. This shows that the increase to 7 took place one by one. Then he says another narrative, and this narrative is also adjacent to the previous one, is also found in the Tafsir of Tabri, shows that this increase took place in one go when at the third time Gabriel returned to the Prophet. Now, another contradiction that he points out is that another narrative, and this time this is also a narrative which is also found in the Tafsir of Tabri, the Almighty asked the Prophet to read the Quran on 3 ahruf after Gabriel returned to him the third time. And the fourth time he returned, he asked the Prophet to read on 7 ahruf. So actually he's criticizing the variants which say that the number of times in which Gabriel went and came back to provide ease, in some of them, all of them, the ease is provided in one go, and in some others, this ease is provided in several steps, which according to him contradicts each other. The second contradiction that he's pointed out is that the permission to recite the Quran in 7 ahruf according to one narrative was given in one sitting, and a sitting with Michael or Mikhail suggesting the Prophet to ask for more, and Gabriel complying after the Prophet's request until the number reached 7. Other narratives show that Gabriel went and returned each time with one harf. So this is the critique that he has presented. And as far as the first is concerned, he is not given any narrative, but he is again referring to a narrative which is found in Tabri's Tafsir. And other narratives are also there in which we find that Gabriel went to the Almighty one by one, and then this ease was given. But as he's in the first of them, he says that this ease was given in just one sitting. So this, according to him, is a major contradiction. The third contradiction view that he's pointed out is that in one narrative, when Ubay entered the mosque, he heard a person reciting the Quran in a different way than his. And in another narrative, two men entered the mosque and read the Quran in a different way than his. So the first of them is also found in Tabri's Tafsir, and the second is also found in Tabri's Tafsir. So he says that this is a contradiction in The first of them, Ubay, entered the mosque and he heard the person reciting the Quran differently. And in another narrative, it is not he and the person who is in question, but there are two different men who entered the mosque and they read the Quran differently from the one that he actually was acquainted with. The fourth contradiction that Imam Hui has pointed out is that is regarding the inappropriate answer to the question asked in a narrative in which Ibn Mas'ud differed with a person regarding the number of verses in a surah. The answer which was given by Ali, who was beside the Prophet, was, "The Prophet directs you to recite in the way you have been taught." In other words, in Al-Khuy's opinion, the answer does not address the question. And I'm going to read out this narrative before you because this text has not been discussed in the earlier talks. So it is appropriate that I just read it out before you. And this narrative, viewers, has been recorded by Tabari in his tafsir. And it is actually from Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. So the words are, "Qala Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, tamarayna fi suratim min al-Qur'an, faqulna khamsun wa salasun aw sittun wa salasun aya. Qal, فانطلقنا الى رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم فوجدنا عليا يناجيه قال فقلنا ان اختلفنا في القراءه قال فاحمر وجه رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم وقال انما حلك من كان قبلكم باختلافهم بينهم قال ثم اسر الى علي شيئا فقال لنا علي ان رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم يامركم ان تقرؤوا كما علمتم." Which means, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud narrated that there arose a dispute between us regarding the number of verses of a surah. In our dispute, we said it has 35 verses or 36 verses. We took the matter to the Prophet and found Ali whispering to his ears. We said, "We have differed in reciting the Quran." At this, the Prophet's face turned red and said, "Those before you perished because of differences between themselves." He then whispered something in Ali's ears. Ali then said to us, "The Prophet of God has directed you to read in the way you have been taught," which the words are "Ya'murukum an taqra'u kama 'ullimtum." You should read the words the way they have been taught to you. And so the basic critique on this narrative, according to Imam Khuy, is that the answer is not conform to the question. The question was regarding the difference of the number of verses, and the answer actually said that you should not fight in the Quran. So, although it is difficult to make out how Imam Khuy is placing this narrative in the seven Ahruf narratives, but perhaps because of the fact that people have differed in the Quran, he has presented as his basis. So, this is as far as his four contradictions are concerned. I will now come to Javed al-Manghamidi, my own teacher, who has actually dismissed this narrative and he has presented his critique. And I'm now going to present a summary of his critique. The first point that he has made in his Mizan is that his famous book Mizan, which is actually a book on the contents of Islam, the way he has understood Islam. So he says, firstly, no one has ever been able to offer a convincing explanation of this hadith, which renders it to be totally ambiguous. And he then cites Suyuti, who, while acknowledging this fact, has said that it is from among the Mutashabihat. So the first critique is by Ghamadi is that actually no one has ever presented a convincing explanation, and precisely because of this lack of any convincing explanation, Imam Suyuti has regarded it to be among the Mutashabihat. Secondly, he says that the most plausible interpretation of the word Ahruf is that it connotes pronunciation of words. Thus, the words that he has used in his Urdu book is Lughat and Lahjat. There is a difference between the two. In the former, the pronunciation of the word changes because of a variation in Harakat, while in the latter, the pronunciation of a word changes because of a variation in accent. So the Lughat and Lahjat, Lughat would refer to the fact that the way the particular word is spelled out is different. And in the second case, the Lahja or the accent changes. So he says that perhaps this is the most plausible interpretation of this narrative. However, in this case, the text of the hadith itself negates this meaning. So he says that the best possible interpretation could have been that we regard the lahjat or the accents and the pronunciation, because we can accept the fact that people could have a different accent and they could spell a word differently, but the word does not change. And a very famous example has already occurred earlier on. For example, the word bakhl and bukhl, both are the pronunciations of the same word. So Ghamidi says that perhaps this is the best possible explanation. But then he says that since Umar and Hisham, in the Umar-Hisham narrative, they belong to the same tribe of Quraysh, and the same people of the same tribe cannot differ in harakat and lahjat, and they would be actually reading it the same way. So this explanation, he says also, although would have been the most plausible, but the text of the hadith itself rejects it. And may I also point out, viewers, that Ghamidi is actually presenting his critique specifically on the Umar Hisham variant. He's not discussed the other variants, which I shall further later on come back to. But his primary critique is based on the Umar Hisham variant, which he has first cited in his book, and then he has actually posited these points. Now, thirdly, he says that this difference of pronunciation between various tribes is accepted. Then, if it is accepted that there is a difference of pronunciation between various tribes and they were allowed to read it variously, the word unzila in the narrative is totally against this interpretation, because it says unzil al-Quran, which means that the Almighty has revealed this Quran on 7 Aruf. It is not that the tribes are allowed to read the Quran on their own pronunciation, because if this had been the case, then the word unzila is very not appropriate, because unzila tells us that if there was a variation in pronunciation which was allowed, then it was revealed by the Almighty. Now, the point that he's making is that on the contrary, the Quran has actually specified that the language in which the Quran was revealed was the language of the Prophet's tribe, which is the Quraysh, and he's already cited the same verses which he have already discussed earlier on. So how can, he says, we expect that the Almighty himself revealed the Quran in various pronunciations? Because the verse or the hadith itself says that the Quran was revealed on 7 Aruf by the Almighty. And if it is taken to refer to various types of pronunciation, then these pronunciations were not from God, they were from the tribes themselves. So the word unzila, which means the Quran was revealed, would not fit here. It would not be appropriate, because, as he said, that the Almighty never revealed these pronunciations. It was the people themselves who stuck to these pronunciations. And finally, viewers, he says that Hisham had accepted Islam on the day Mecca had been conquered. And if this hadith is accepted, it would mean that for almost 20 years, closest companions of the Prophet, like Umar رضي الله عنه, never knew that the Quran was being revealed in some other form or reading, because it was only after Hisham had accepted Islam would he be reading the Quran in a certain prayer when Umar must have heard him. So this would mean that so many years had elapsed. Fatah Makkah took place in the 8th Hijrah. So we see that the Meccan period was almost 12 or 13 years. So if we add up all these years, we see that there are 20 years which have lapsed, and Umar, a person who was like a shadow to the Prophet, who was always around him, who had attended most of his congregational prayers, or must have attended many of the prayers in which the Prophet was reading the Quran, he was a person who never knew that the Quran was being revealed on various readings or various forms, because it was only after Hisham had read this Quran in a certain way, and because Hisham accepted Quran Islam 20 years hence, this would only mean that for 20 years, Umar never knew that the Quran was revealed on a different form or reading. So this is the summary of the critique of Ghamidi. I've already presented the summary of the critique of Imam Hui earlier on. So now I'm going to present my own analysis of these two critiques. Now, as far as Imam Hui's critique is concerned, the text is yet to elicit any response. His critique on the text, if you remember, his critique was divided into three parts. One of them was that he had raised various questions on the text of the narrative, the way it has been interpreted variously in different interpretations. However, no sound explanation or no sound response has yet been invoked. Now, his criticism on the chain of narration has invited some response. His rejection of the 7 Aruf Ahadith is primarily based on the fact that they are not narrated by narrators of the Ahlul Bayt. So now we are coming to that part of his critique in which he has rejected this narrative because he thinks that they have not been reported by the Ahlul Bayt. Now, Abu Shaheen in his Tariq al-Quran says that this principle itself is not acceptable, that if a particular narrative is not reported by the people of Ahlul Bayt, or it does not have the imams in its narration, then this is not an acceptable point that such a hadith shall not be accepted. Now, and as far as his contradictions or his critique on the contradictions of the narrative are concerned, we also find a response on this. And we find Abu Shahba in his Al-Madkhal actually responding to him. So as far as the first, second and third contradictions are concerned, Abu Shahba says that they can be understood if it is understood that they depict various incidents and not one. Moreover, some narrators have stated each return of the angel and others have stated one. Some, but since narrators agree on the same principal statement that the Quran was revealed on 7 Ahruf, these minor details can be ignored. The details in which the ease was provided, for example, in one sitting, or was it in more than one sitting, whether Gabriel went to the to Almighty in one go or in one step, some of the details which we've already seen. He says that these are very small and minor details and they can be ignored, because the principal statement is that basically, which comes later, and that is that the Quran was revealed on 7 Ahruf. And he says that such contradictions cannot be paid any attention to because this narrative is mutawatir. So I'm presenting here the view of Abdul Sabur Shaheen. Now, regarding the fourth contradiction, Shaheen says that there exists no contradiction because each companion received the Quran such that in some cases the verses were merged and in others they were distinct. So if you remember, the fourth contradiction which Quyu had pointed out was regarding the number of verses which had been counted. And here he says that this should not be any cause of alarm, because some of the verses, they were connected to each other and some of the verses were not connected to each other. And the verse marks, since they are not distinct and they were made later on, this number of this difference in the number of counting, the number of surah, number of verses of surah, is a possibility. And this cannot be a cause of any alarm. Now, as far as Ghamadi's critique is concerned, I have yet to see any plausible or any weighty response on this critique. But let me now add my own view on the critiques of both these, as pointed out by these personalities. Now, as far as Imam Khuwi's critique is concerned, I think the first critique, which says that this narrative cannot be accepted because it stands on the basis that this narrative has not been reported by the members of the Ahlul Bayt and their imams, so therefore it shall be rejected. I would not go along by this criticism, and I have also analyzed later on, and I shall present that criticism later on when we are closing this discussion, that the way the Shiite imams have presented this narrative, or their own version of this narrative, how it has been reported and how and the amount of criticism they invoke. So that is something which I'll defer later on. But the principal statement I'd like to give here is that this principle is not acceptable, that if a particular narrative is not reported by the people of Ahlul Bayt, then it shall not be accepted. But as far as the criticism of the narrative which has been reported by the people of Ahlul Bayt, as I said, I shall defer that criticism once we close discussion on this topic. Now, as far as Imam Khuwi's criticism on the text is concerned, it is much more comprehensive than that of Ghamidi. Because he has presented his criticism on almost all the interpretations, or all the major interpretations, we can say, he has presented his points of view. Its strong and weak points have already been discussed earlier. I've already referred to my own critique on these, but I can say this much, that his criticism is much more comprehensive than that of Ghamidi, who has confined himself to the Umar Hisham narrative. Most of his criticism on the contradiction part is also very strong. So my own summary of his critique would be that as far as the chain of narration narrative critique is concerned, that is not acceptable, because this is not a principle that narratives which are not reported by the people of Ahlul Bayt are not acceptable, or cannot be acceptable. Similarly, the fact that his the text, the criticism which has been invited on the text, I have already discussed this separately and also pointed out my view on some of the strong and weak points that he has presented. And the third criticism which he has presented, or the third type of critique that he has presented, relates to various contradictions which arise between various narratives, and I think that most of it is also strong. Now, as far as Ghamidi's view is concerned, it seems well substantiated, as I said earlier on. However, in my personal opinion, I think that since he has confined himself just to the Umar Hisham variant, his there are two basic things which we do not find, or which I would call as shortcomings of his critique. Now, the first of them is that even if he has confined himself to criticism on a single variant which infringes on the finality of the Quran, he has not dealt with similar variants which equally challenge the same finality. So it seems that in his own book, the way this narrative has been brought up, it has been brought up in a section in which the finality of the Quran, or the fact that the Quran has the ultimate authority on everything, has been presented. But he has not presented similar narratives of the seven Ahruf narrative which equally challenge the finality of the Quran. Thus, for example, the Ubay variant, the famous Ubay variant, in which Ubay had said that the nature of doubt which crept in his heart when he saw the Prophet ratifying two people reading differently was the one which had really alarmed him. And similarly, we have the Ubay ibn Mas'ud narrative also in this regard, and both have been presented. Some of the complete text of this narrative you'll find earlier on in the very first lecture. But my first comment on Ghamidi's critique is that it, although it deals with the finality of the Quran, it deals with the fact that this narrative is actually challenging the finality of the Quran, but it is strange that he has not brought up two other very major narratives also on the seven Ahruf, which also equally challenge the finality of the Quran. He should have perhaps referred to them also, because it is not just the Umar Hisham narrative which does challenge this finality of the Quran, but as I said, some of the earlier ones as well. The second critique which comes to my mind vis-a-vis the criticism of Ghamidi is that his criticism is very general in nature. It primarily revolves around just one interpretation of the narrative, which he himself has said could be the most plausible one. And he has said, if the narrative is interpreted to mean that it refers to the seven types of lahjat or lughat, and perhaps this is the most plausible meaning, he has actually not criticized or made his comment known on some of the other major interpretations of this narrative. And I think that some of the other interpretations of this narrative also merited some comment from him. But he has confined his comment just to a single interpretation, which, as he has said, is to him is the most plausible interpretation. So, viewers, this is as far as a complete discussion is concerned on the text of this narrative. We have discussed various critiques on this text of this narrative. We have discussed people who have interpreted this narrative. We have discussed the critique on these interpretations. And in the end, my own conclusion is that this narrative cannot be accepted. There is no convincing explanation of this narrative as far as this text is concerned. And in the later or in the next sessions, inshallah, I'll discuss the chain of narration of this narrative. And we shall see how these chains of narration stand. But as far as the text of the narrative is concerned, I think, in my personal opinion, the way, the primary reason to judge a narrative is the text part of the narrative. And to me, the text part of the narrative, or the questions which arise on the text of the narrative, are so strong, and there's hardly any single convincing explanation of this narrative that this cannot be accepted. And if it turns out in the later sessions also, as can be seen later, that the chains of narration also of all these narratives are weak, then we can simply clearly say that not only the text of the narrative is weak, but also their chains of narration are also weak. But inshallah, in the next sessions, I will now take up in detail, in a very comprehensive manner, all the people who have reported this narrative and the various chains of narration in which this narrative has been reported. Till then, أَقُولُ قَوْلِي هَذَا وَاسْتَغْفِرُ اللَّهَ لِي وَلَكُمْ وَلِسَائِرِ الْمُسْلِمِينَ وَالْمُسْلِمَاتِ